Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Good evening, Earth Explorers. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. If you want to be part of the program tonight, you can do so easily. We have a multitude of ways. You can call us at 530-413-4511. Anywhere off planet, 530-413-4515. Anywhere east of Earth, 530-413-4520. Anywhere west of Earth. And at the suggestion of one of our very loyal listeners, we have just added live chat at xsquaredradio.com while you are listening to this program on the BBS Radio Network, where we have been now going on our into our fifth year. While you're listening to that, you can open another browser, go to xsquaredradio.com, and go to our live chat. I will do my very best to answer your chat questions as they come up. And you can be involved in that way. That way your voice and your real name and all that won't go out over the air if you don't want it to. The solar wind tonight, 305 kilometers per second. And the proton count is down to an astonishingly low 0.3 per cubic meter. And I think this is definitely the lowest we have seen on this program since we began reporting this to you 5 years ago. But there is news. Sunspot 1158 has just unleashed the strongest solar flare of the year, an M6 category blast. At 1738 UT on February 13th, that's today. So if you thought the sun was really nice and it was gorgeous out there, you needed to look through a coronoscope and see what was going on. The eruption appears to have launched a coronal mass ejection toward Earth. It also produced a loud blast of radio emissions heard in shortwave receivers around the day side of our planet. Very interesting stuff. There are five major sunspots facing Earth today, and sunspot 1158 is still growing rapidly and crackling with M-class solar flares. Remember, there's only one class higher than that, X. The active region is now more than 100,000 kilometers wide, with at least a dozen Earth-side dark cores scattered beneath its unstable magnetic canopy. Earth-directed eruptions are likely in the hours ahead. The remains of old sunspot complex 1147 through 1149, they're kind of scattered right in there together, are rotating over the eastern limb today. Although the region is in an advanced state of decay, it is not dead yet. During the late hours of Friday, a plasma bullet came rocketing out of the region's unstable core. I told you that solar cycle 24 would ramp up quickly. The sleeping sun is waking up. I also reminded you to get a good portion of your cash out of the bank. Slowly, people, slowly. Walk. Do not run. You still have time. A few withdrawals at a time. Make sure you have cash on you or at the ready at all times. We have made some revisions to the Kindle version of Remembering the Future. If you bought a version and did not get all the there will be a folder on the website at rememberingthefuturebook.com where you can get them in color. We apologize, but getting images into Kindle book is not the easiest thing in the world. This week, the problem will be fixed, so you can go there and you can get the images for free. If you haven't read the book, you can look at the images too, but you might want to have the text to go along with it. And if you do, you can buy it right there on the website at rememberingthefuturebook.com. What will you get? Well, you'll get the book autographed and sent to you. And you will also receive the complete audio version of the book as a bonus, as a download immediately. So while you're waiting for your book to arrive, you can be listening to it in your car or your iPod or iPhone. And that's a good deal. If you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read it for you. If you just want the audio version, it's available there as well for a mere $7.95. So we try to accommodate all budgets. We really want to get this information out there for you so that you can unlock the abundance of the universe and make the law of attraction work for you. While you're working on that, we want you to help get your emergency preparedness plans together. Please visit our friends at 1-800-PREPARE.com. My friend Paul Faust, former firefighter, and his EMT buddies in New York City after 9/11 saw that there was a great vacuum in the availability of prepackaged emergency preparedness kits for people to buy that are affordable with free shipping that will come to you quickly, high quality. Some of the food packages will last for 25 years. Talk about set it and forget it for emergency preparedness. This is the way to go. Get it in the pack, put it in the car, put it in the front closet, and then if misfortune should find you or your household or your neighborhood, you will not be a burden upon the emergency preparedness personnel that have to take care of everyone else that didn't listen to this program. If you've read Remembering the Future, or if you're going to read it, I highly recommend that you also pick up the Meditation Assistance CD called Merkaba 2, produced by Maureen St. Germain. She's my teacher. This is a meditation for busy people, 17 breaths, and you're in. And in the book, we teach you the 18th breath. This is a way for people who have never meditated before or who have meditated and not had great success with it to help you listen to the universe, listen to the effects that you're having on the universe so that when your intentions come back, the effects of your intentions come back around to you, you can make it, you can thump it again and make it work again and make the resonation occur for you even greater. Tonight's program, normally we talk about the mysteries of the universe and of the earth, and that we will do tonight. Usually we approach that from a scientific point of view, and tonight we are going to do that, but not from a scientific point of view, from a political scientific point of view. Why is that? Because part of the thing that's happening around the world right now, which in the major news with what is happening in Egypt and what is happening in Palestine as we speak, and you'll learn about that in tonight's program as well, is also happening here in the United States. And it was also predicted in writing in the third volume of The Ark of Millions of Years. You'll remember a portion of that book is written in the year 2015, a look back from the future to now. And these items were listed out, and the phenomenal alignment, even the words used in today's newscast, fit what was written in that book. So if you're interested in picking that up, it's at arcofmillionsofyears.com, or you can go right to the online store at Phoenix Science Foundation. If you forget where the website is, arcofmillionsofyears.com, arc like Noah's Ark, then you can just Google Ark of Millions of Years and you'll find it. Easy to find, easy to pick up. So what we're going to approach tonight is probably going to catch things on fire near your laptop. So I suggest that you move all flammable materials away, recline your chair, loosen that belt a little bit, look out the window. We'll be back in 40 seconds. X Squared Radio is about to launch.
Spice expands consciousness. The spicy flight to space travel.
Remember, if you want to be part of tonight's program, there are several different ways to do it. You can call in 530-413-4511, 530-413-4511. You can listen on your cell phone while you're walking around minding your own business, 712-432-0075, with the access code 318116#, or you can access the online chat at xsquaredradio.com. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go to xsquaredradio.com. The chat room is right there on the screen. I'll do my best to try to monitor it. And if you have any questions, we will definitely bring it up for you. tonight's program is probably going to be a little politically inflammatory. Don't mean it to be. I don't mean it to be divisionary at all, but we can't let the wave that we started 4 years ago in riding the arc of millions of years go by. We have to take advantage of it. We have to let our thoughts resonate with what we started. So here we go. And if this conflicts a little bit with your history books, you're just going to have to call in and talk about it. Much has been written about Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War, also known as the War Between the States, or as we call it here in the South, the recent unpleasantness. We know that Lincoln led the nation through the Civil War, but not as many articles have been written about why Lincoln fought the war to stop the secession of Southern states. Was secession legal? The South certainly thought so and only wanted to leave the Union in peace. So why did Lincoln stop Southern secession and thus unleash the bloodiest war in American history? Here is a textbook factoid. This is right out of the textbook. This, however, doesn't change the fact that the Southern states seceded, particularly those of the Deep South, cited slavery as their main underlying grievance with the Northern states in general, and the incoming Lincoln administration in particular. Interesting. This is the typical hindsight that is racist, down a path of division and mistrust and fear. The truth is that states make great decisions based on economics and not ideology. That is the true fact. The textbook factoid I read you is nothing more than propaganda designed to rewrite history into making you believe that Lincoln caused the death of more than 600,000 Americans on American soil to free the slaves. Nothing could be further from the truth. Lincoln followed this brief civics lesson with the following statement. It follows from these views that no state, upon its own mere motion, can lawfully get out of the Union. He added that resolves and ordinances to that effect are legally any state or states against the authority of the United States are insurrectionary or revolutionary according to circumstances. Interesting stuff. Well, it kind of, it doesn't sound anything like that textbook factoid to me. When I read that, it sounds like more of a civic unrest that Lincoln is talking about. So I'm going to read another document to you, a document that I'm sure you're familiar with the name of it, but I don't know if you're familiar with the words of it or with the meaning of those words. So as I read it to you, you're going to recognize it right off. I'm sure you will. But I want you to listen closely because this is going to make a big difference. This is the crest of the wave. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That much you remember, right? I'm sure you do. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Important to remember that line. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Safety and happiness. Sounds like pretty universal goals, doesn't it? It is not the role of leadership to rule over the American people of the United States. That's my words. It is not the role of leadership to rule over the American people of the United States. It is the role of leadership to represent the governed in this republic. Whenever leadership has even blurred this line or more boldly crossed it like a bully, then it has resulted in revolution. Now, there are a couple revolutions we're going to talk about tonight, one of which you're very familiar with, the other of which I'm sure you know little or nothing about. Our system of government provides mechanisms by which the governed people, that would be you, of this nation, can return the process to more of a republic. That is to say, we the people can fire anyone during an election. If the vote is properly counted and tallied, this process works pretty well. When the people who are represented actually come out and vote, the process works pretty well. When the people have ready access to the platforms of the candidates, the process works pretty well. Well, those are three big ifs. First of all, the vote has to be properly counted and tallied. My goodness, hardly an election has gone by, local or otherwise, that we have seen proper voting and proper counting. If you don't believe me, this coming election, why don't you just take a drive up to Ohio or take a drive up to Detroit and watch the busloads of people that are being hauled around by the thousands from voting station to voting station to voting station to vote again and again and again. Why can they do this? Because no identification is required. Because identification is a violation of civil rights. Quite convenient, isn't it? And when the people represented come out and vote, when have we ever seen more than 20% of the people come out and vote? And then when we have a close election, as we did say when Clinton beat Bush for the presidency, Clinton only got 43% of the vote. Well, that's not a majority. Yes, it is when your opponent is two people. So 43% of 20% of the country, if I do my calculations correctly, that's about 8.6% of the people actually voted the president in office. You see, the process didn't work. And when the people have access to the platforms of the candidates, the process works pretty well. We have heard of late some outcry to do away with the Electoral College. Well, I got to tell you, those of you listening to X Squared Radio, please tell your friends this is a bad idea. Because if we do away with the Electoral College, those of you that don't live in New York, Florida, Texas, Michigan, or California, you're never going to see another presidential candidate. That's right. Because all a presidential candidate has to do is win those five states. He's done. He's won everyone. He wins because he has a majority of the population of the United States. He has a majority of the electoral votes of the United States. Flyover country will never see a candidate because they only have a half a dozen or a dozen electoral votes. It doesn't make any difference. Those electoral votes are never counted. They're never affected because they never hear the campaign speeches. They only go after the big fish. Why? Because Kansas can't compete with California. Because New Hampshire can't compete with Florida. Because Tennessee can't compete with New York. Not for population. States that have 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 million people living in them are inconsequential unless the Electoral College is in place. Then it works. Then it works. Then states have to be campaigned in. Voters have to hear the debates. Those things have to be broadcast, and that means candidates have to spend money to get those platforms exposed in those states. Now, we happen to have a new media. 1996, which is not that long ago, people, 14 years is a flash in the pan. 14 years ago, we had a new media come of age. And honestly, we really didn't even figure out how to communicate with it beyond email until about 4 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago. That's it. That's it. This next election is going to be decided by social networks. If you don't believe me, read Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years. It's in there. So these three processes have to work well. When none of these happen, the people lose control of their leadership. The government decays into the very bureaucracies that once answered to the leadership. The animosity of the agencies over which the president's cabinet is supposed to direct turns on that leadership with obstinance and begins burying its call under mountains of red tape and subterfuge. Subterfuge is deception. Subterfuge is disinformation. Subterfuge are reports so voluminous nobody reads them. Their objective becomes self-preservation and expansion rather than service to the people of the nation. Enough tradition has been established now to prove that the economic perpetuation of the global corporations and national labor unions is the main mission of the agencies and departments of the federal government. Yes, somebody just wrote in, well, Egypt just fought a revolution with the social network of Facebook. Facebook, I believe it. Actually, that's true with the exception of the word fought. Egypt demonstrated that a peaceful gathering of people shut down a nation and force a tyrannical government to leave town. And we'll talk a little bit about that later because this is the main thing in the news, and we have to be very, very careful here because Janet Napolitano has said that the American people are the number one security threat to America. The threat level is higher now than it was in 9/11 because they're afraid. They're so afraid of us. Oh, this has resulted in a new economy. In this new economy, up to 60% of the wages of Americans is confiscated and redistributed, suffering massive attrition by the very agencies whose task it is to administer those funds. That means they take a dollar out of your check, and by the time they get done with their red tape and their overhead, about 9 cents of it, 9 pennies out of a dollar, actually reaches the need. If and only if that need is not in opposition to the desires of the leaders over those agencies. That's exactly right. Now, let me run that by you one more time. Supposedly, we elect a president. The president then appoints a cabinet. The cabinet is made of, oh, supposedly the best and skilled people that agree with him. He has the right to do that. Unfortunately, what has happened over the last 50 years is that these individuals are now becoming secretaries. A secretary of energy, a secretary of education, a secretary of transportation, of this, of that, of the other thing. Now, that's all well and good. These wise and skilled people can be secretary, they can be advisors. That's the job of the president's cabinet. But now they've become leaders over gigantic organizations with trillion-dollar budgets. And what do they do with that money? Exactly. Exactly. One chatter's got it right on the nail. They take that money and they self-preserve. They launder it right back to the very forces that would not only keep them in business, make sure that they don't lose their jobs, but to make sure the leader that has given them that reign is fed the money back. And the organizations that supported that president received the very grants that everyone else is applying for. The recent outrage over the small fraction of funds that actually reaches the end user due to the extreme overhead of the United Way is a drop in the ocean compared to the trillions that have been embezzled by the agencies from the American taxpayer. Some of these agencies are not elected bodies. They're not divisions of the federal government, and yet they have federal budgets. They're not beholden to anyone, and congressmen are treated discourteously like temps. You know what a temp is? A temp, you know, a hack, a temporary employee, someone who's not going to be around very long, someone who has no authority whatsoever. That's what they're treated like. If a congressman calls up the Department of Energy on behalf of one of their constituents, not only are they hung up on, they're asked not to call back again. And the committees in the Congress to which these agencies report are repudiated if they try to make any kind of investigation into where the money's going. Ultimately, the American people do not have due process or remedy in this new economy. Members of Congress are actually berated and ordered out of the office by these agencies. I know this. I'm communicating with them. The only redress is for the people to appeal to their state legislators. Now, after nearly five decades of such appeals, the state leadership is listening. Arizona has sued the federal government over failing to protect the border between Arizona and Mexico. 27 states have passed sovereignty acts declaring that they have the right to nullify certain conditions of federal regulations that are unratified at the state level. People, that is the predecessing, the precession, the groundwork laying right before us. Nullification is the decision by a state that it will not comply with any federal law or unfunded mandate until it has been ratified by the state's legislature. Well, that's been excoriated by the White House. If that ratification does not occur, then the law is declared null and void in that state. Well, the federal government can't allow that. They've got to have ultimate authority. There is no basis in federal law for this act, but nearly every state has a complete and separate charter of law. Those legislatures can and have passed these laws. The last time this was tried, only 13 states left the union. This time, three-quarters of the states will act in unison to declare that a change must take place. They have declared that the acts of federal leadership are unconstitutional already, Already, multiple courts have done that. And that the confiscation and redistribution of American wealth amounts to a quid pro quo to bolster global corporations and perpetuate a planetary, warlike, imperial policy that violates the very inalienable rights every officer and every soldier is sworn to uphold. I will continue with that great document now. And I think you'll recognize this as well. We'll cover it a couple times. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, listen closely, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably this object, devises a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. These abuses of power have taken place. These usurpations continue and escalate with each subsequent administration. The despotism by the rulers in the White House is brazen and violates the privacy and liberty of America with impunity, or so they suppose. The violations for which this historic declaration was made are as follows. By the way, that's the Declaration of Independence. The words preserved under glass at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. I speak no secessionary talk. This is the Constitution. This is the groundwork. The violations for which this historic declaration was made are as follows. I want just to see if you can compare this to today's news. You don't have to go back very far. You could probably just realize this on your own if you're at all astute. But I want you to pay close attention. You might want to take a paper and pencil and just make a check mark by each one of these if you've got your Declaration of Independence handy. Tell me if these things are happening today. In the Declaration of Independence, they use the pronoun he. He would be the King of England at the time that they were declaring independence. Remember, the colonies were established, funded, organized, supported financially and in other ways by the British Crown. But, you know, after a couple hundred years, people want to be on their own. You know, you got several generations over here, and they're developing their own accent, and we're kind of having our own melting pot over here. And the colonies are no longer the colonies, you know. We kind of lose control of that stuff. So he represents the crown. And we'll just leave it at that, the crown. Tell me if these things are happening in your state. Remember, the phone lines are open. And if you've got an example of this, I would appreciate a call or put it in the chat line. I'm watching it. 530-413-4511 or 530-413-4515. And you don't have to be an American to understand these. We have a lot of Canadian listeners. We have a lot of listeners in Wales, and we have a ton of listeners in Australia. I want you to pay attention closely. And if these things are happening in your neck of the woods, how about dropping me a line? These are the grievances, violations for which this historic declaration was made. He has obstructed the administration of justice, by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. My goodness, do I even need to explain this one? The president is the one that appoints federal judges. Federal judges serve for life. The president appoints and chooses the justices of the Supreme Court. Of course, he directs the establishment of judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. Exactly right. My goodness, the White House is all over that. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. New offices. Gee, would that be the Food and Drug Administration? Would that be the Department of Education? Would that be the Environmental Protection Agency? Would that be the Department of Energy? And the list goes on and on and on, and their officers swarm over our free lands, tell us what we can and cannot do with our own property, what we can and cannot do with our own money, what we cannot do with speech, what we can and cannot eat. And they produce nothing. They produce nothing. And they eat out our substance. Trillions of dollars a year. Not a decade. A year. The federal debt is built from the operations costs of these new offices. And they are erected and controlled directly by the president. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without consent of our legislatures. I don't even have to cover that one. Every state has their own National Guard, and they are, by and large, under the control of the governors. But where are they serving? They're not serving in this country. They're not protecting us against floods and tornadoes and earthquakes. They're not taking care of the peace and security of our states. No, they're deployed as armed forces, and they're sent to foreign countries to kill foreign people. They're sent overseas to do the will of, oh, that's right, the commander-in-chief. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. I don't know if you've seen your local police lately. Maybe you have. Maybe they walk the streets. Maybe you see them at the airport. Do these even look like the cops that we had 20 years ago? Not even close, people. These police are not public servants. Their goal is not to protect and to serve. These are military. They go to military training. These people are indoctrinated with military footing. They're not civil servants any longer. They are military among us. And the goal is to make all police forces under the Department of, oh, gee, another new office, Homeland Security. And we have a whole new set of rules called, affectionately enough, the Patriot Act. Everything from the Miranda rights down to your right, your constitutional right to face your accuser, to a speedy trial. All of that is usurped by presidential decree. None of that was ratified by the states. None of that was ratified by the states. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power, the state power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. Let me just put one word in there and you'll understand this perfectly. You ready to read this in modern language? He has combined with the United Nations to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. That can only come from the president through his cabinet. And there are a few more straight-up grievances for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. I see some right down here in Mississippi. You see some right in your neighborhood riding around. They're riding around. They're in uniform. They have weapons. They have armed and armored vehicles riding around in our neighborhoods. What are they doing? I think they're quartered. Yeah, that's it. I think they're on salary. I think our tax dollars are paying for that. Oh, that's right. We're under threat orange. That's new, isn't it? No. No, wait a minute. It's not. We've been orange since 9/11. Yeah, that's right. We're at war. With who? With a bunch of drug dealers and goat herders? Are you kidding me? We haven't faced a soldier in uniform in 10 years. For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on. Say two words and you'll get this right away. Ruby Ridge. For protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. And it's not the only one. What you hear in the press about anything that you want. You want to talk about weapons charges. You want to talk about printing their own script. You want to talk about illegal militias. And the list goes on and on and on. And it's all a threat to American security. And it's all a bunch of nonsense. And we send in armed troops and we shoot them dead. And then the people that pulled the trigger are protected from punishment by mock trials. We never hear anything about it. Yes, one of the chatters has already nailed it. Pepper Dog and Waco. That's right, Waco, Texas. Very good. We watched innocent people burned alive on national television, courtesy of Janet Reno. By the way, those were not National Guard that did the burning. Those were regular federal army troops. That is unconstitutional. There are four more. Four, cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. What? For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. Excuse me while I take a drink of water. So, you think that you could just go into business for yourself and that you can sell what you have to who? To Germany? To Sweden? To Uganda? To Brazil? Not so. That has to go through the International Trade Administration. That has to be approved by the U.S. Department of Commerce. Once it's passed, and by the way, there's a list of all kinds of things that you cannot send, okay? You obviously can't send grenades. You can't send rifles. You can't send ammunition, explosives, blah, blah, blah. But you also can't send computers. You also cannot send video games. You also cannot send things that would give aid and comfort to the enemy. What enemy? there are tens of thousands of American businesses that want to export product to foreign countries. We complain every single day about our trade deficit, that we're billions of dollars behind. It's devaluing our dollar like you cannot believe. That's why countries want to buy our stuff, because our dollar's so darn cheap. Their money goes so far in this country. But Americans can't ship their stuff. Trade has been cut off with all parts of the world, not through a blockade that sits offshore, through a blockade that sits right in our own departments of export. You would not believe the mountain of paperwork and red tape and investigations and qualifications that every single business needs to have to go through in order to export so much as a pencil eraser. It's expensive. And the number of hands that are out along the hallway to the desk of approval are so many that the cost of exporting that product is almost prohibitively expensive. And our government wonders why we can't export. Oh, it's wonderful that the president say, this year we're going to push exports. We're really going to help small business export our stuff overseas. And then he turns right around and orders his new offices to stop those exports from happening. The only exports that they protect are those that come from the major corporations that are involved in funneling campaign dollars to those individuals who are running for re-election. Cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. There's three more. You're not going to like this. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. Okay, there are whole other programs that are dedicated to that. I don't even need to go into that one. Every single one of you out there listening pays a federal tax. Now, when you pay a state tax, it's not so bad. Because when you pay a state tax, you're getting all kinds of things. You're getting health care. You're getting roads. You're getting utilities. You get electricity and sewer and clean water. You get local police force. You get help in case of disasters like floods and hurricanes and tornadoes. But the federal money, you get nothing for. Nothing. There's no use to it whatsoever. It's just overhead. Yeah, it's overhead. And the states have to get some cojones on them and stop sending that money to the federal government. You want to really bring somebody to the table? Stop sending them money. That'll bring them to the table. There are two more. For depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, a la Patriot Act. I don't need to go any further than that. The Homeland Security is unbelievable, unbelievable in its violation of privacy and in a violation of a speedy trial by jury. Finally, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses. I don't know about that. Where would he transport us to? Has he done that? Oh, he has. Yeah, he has actually grabbed U.S. troops that have committed violations under orders in a situation where they had to think for themselves and they thought wrong. They have been sent to stand trial. Yeah, well, okay. You're right. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. Gee, that sounds like a pretty good list of grievances for the Declaration of Independence. I think there's about 18 of them there, and I think our current leadership, notwithstanding the current administration, fits about 16 of those 18 every time they open their mouth. Every time they sign a check, they are violating these very things that ended up causing this separation from our parent country. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. a prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant. It is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Now, it is easy to see that this British colony trying to act like a nation of united people with their own ideas about inalienable rights, decided to draw a line in the sands of Virginia. The British Crown was outraged, and the result was the War for Independence, which, by the way, started in, you got it, South Carolina. What a great place. York, South Carolina. Amazing. Colonies, territories, and new states, America was going to face another test of its union a mere 84 years later. Just over one lifetime later, they faced it again. In 1860, the nation elected its 16th president. Abraham Lincoln inherited a nation divided. It was a time when executive leadership was needed to mend the rip in the fabric of the American flag. South Carolina, again, was the first of 13 states to secede from the Union with strong prejudice. And we will pick that up in our second hour. Haha, I know you don't want to miss this because this really gets good. It's going to bring it current, okay? This isn't just a history lesson. What we're trying to do is lay a foundation here like we always do. And the hammer is raised. We're about to hit the nail. I know you want to be part of this program. The chat room is going 90 miles an hour. Stuff is just flying through there. 530-413-4511 if you're off planet. 530-413-4515 if you're east of Earth. You know where that is. 530-413-4520 if you're west of Earth. If you're calling west of the Rockies, that's the number for you guys. And those of you that are listening by cell phone, we haven't forgotten you either. It's 732-432-0075. And then you have to put in the access code 318-116-POUND. 318-116-POUND. What we're trying to do here is approach a mystery of the universe. And it's kind of interesting because right here on Earth, very intelligent people, very free people, very outspoken, able to say pretty much anything we want to say. We're being watched. Oh, yeah, we're being watched very closely because what happened in Egypt is having its effect. I can tell you this because just a few hours ago, right before this program, you probably weren't even watching the news. You might have missed it. The next nation. Not next door, but the next nation just resigned its parliament. That's right. The Palestinians, their cabinet just resigned. Why? Because Egypt showed them the way. It's happening. It's happening. The Middle East is beginning to change right before our eyes, just like was predicted. We'll be back. Don't go away. We'll take about a quick 3-minute break.
Well, more X Squared Radio. I saw the knights in armor come, saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archers split the tree.
There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century.
Well, I was lying in a burned-up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky.
There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one. All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun.
Welcome back, my friends, to X Squared Radio. We're so glad that you're here with us tonight. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. Down here doing an engineering contract, helping to relocate a plant and preserve some American jobs. We don't want this company to go out of business. So we're moving them, moving operations to one of their other plants so that we can keep people in work. Good news on a couple things. You know, we try to keep a lot of this stuff separated because we don't want to get the lines blurred here. But good news on lots of fronts. Business-wise, things are going pretty well. If you want to be part of the program here at X Squared Radio, we have a kind of a different format here. We talk about 55 minutes straight, and then we have about a 3 or 4 minute musical break like we just had. Give my voice a little bit of rest, and if people are rebroadcasting this, give them a space to throw in a commercial or two. We used to run commercials on this program a couple of years ago, and it wasn't that people weren't buying anything. It's that overwhelmingly the people said, look, we get commercials everywhere. What we want is content. And so that's what we decided to deliver you here on X Squared Radio. It's also an open forum, so the lines are open anytime. I take all calls. Don't screen anything. You can take me on any way you want. I am non-confrontational. That's why it's called X Squared Radio. Every number put into the formula comes out positive. So let's get started. Tracy from Canada, you're on line one. Welcome to the program. Tracy from Canada, you're on line one. Welcome. There you are.
Hi.
How are you up there? Are you buried under a glacier? I heard you guys have been getting record cold up there.
Well, actually, no. I'm in a place who's not getting it at all. We've got a bit of snow. Nothing near the snowpocalypse they were calling for. You guys in the States got more than we did.
Wow, that's amazing. I talked to my friends in Texas, and they're like, it's the end of the world.
I know. They get a dusting. It's like, what do we do?
What's on your mind?
Well, first-time listener to the show, I just wanted to say I'm loving it so far.
I appreciate it.
I want to add a little bit.
Sure.
I'm in a small city called Guelph. It's about an hour from Toronto, about 2 hours from the Buffalo border. We've had American troops stationed up here in our armory here in Guelph since Easter of 2010.
No kidding.
Yeah. It's a very, very odd event. We never see troops. We see a couple of guys from the reserves.
They're just kind of hanging out and having cheese curds, and or are they doing exercises?
Well, I'm nosy and curious, so I asked them. Oh, what are you boys doing? And they said they were up here for exercises. Now, I was thinking they were perhaps here as security for the G20 because they had some insignias on the uniform that weren't familiar to me in the U.S. Army, so I thought they could have been some form of transnational troop, you know, Canada, the U.S., Mexico, perhaps. They wouldn't answer that question if they were from there, but the gentlemen I've spoken to were obviously from the southern states. They have quite an accent to me.
Interesting. Well, I don't want to go into any more detail about, you know, what they were doing or what kind of equipment they had, because that might compromise them. But it just seems interesting that we would have an American presence in Canada. I mean, are they just positioning for something? And you say they've been there since last Easter. It won't be long till they've been for a whole year.
My thoughts were Toronto would be too obvious, big city. And we're not far from the border if they had to get back to the States for some sort of border guard thing. That was my original thought. But they're here and they haven't left, because I still see their jeeps.
Well, hopefully they're not quartered there. Hopefully they're spending American dollars there and helping to stimulate your local economy.
Well, you know, that could hurt.
Hopefully they're protecting themselves too.
Oh, yeah, of course. They are. They're being very quiet. They're not walking up and down the streets, arms or anything, but they're in uniform. And I've just found that odd that they're up here. And they haven't left after the G20, because I was sure that's what they were here for, but obviously not, because they're still here. So,
interesting. Maybe it's one of those efforts from the Pentagon that they forgot about. Oh, yeah, I forgot. We had those guys up there in Canada. We better bring them home. I don't know. So, but they're not National Guard. They're regular Army.
I'm not sure. I don't know what they are. Stuff. But they're wearing insignia that I've never seen before, to be honest. And I look into things like that and have worked with the American military before, so I've seen some things. But they're pretty close-lipped, and these guys look a little bit... They look a little too fit, you know what I mean? They don't look like regular Army, where some people are short, some people are tall, some people are a little chubby. So they are extremely fit. They look serious and ready. For what, I don't know. I'm in Guelph. This is a place of an agricultural, basically, university city. So nothing's going on up here that we would need, you know. There's no insurrection going on in Ontario, Canada right now that I think. So it's odd.
Or so you think. I mean, every time I hear, of course, we're gearing up for presidential elections in 2012. We do it earlier and earlier every election cycle. And already the candidates are getting up there saying, we live in a very dangerous neighborhood and we need to take more precautions and we need bigger defense budgets. My goodness, we had a $1.3 trillion defense budget this year. How much bigger does it need to be? Unless we're going to be attacked by aliens.
Well, that could be next, or at least they'll probably want us to think that.
Well, there's been no shortage of sci-fi films preparing us for it, so that's probably what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're certainly wanting us, you know, with V and every single movie that's coming out, aliens are coming to come to get us. Have you seen the movie Splice?
I missed that one. Splice, my kids saw it and they said it was cute, and I just don't have a chance to see very many movies. I did manage to see Skyline, though, and I thought, wow, what a hopeless movie.
Yeah, a lot of them are coming out. You know, we're all going to die. Run for the hills. Put your head in the sand because it's all over. I don't believe that myself.
I don't either.
you know, I've worked, I trained as an engineer, robotics and automation here in Canada, and I know there's some miraculous things out there that we could be using other than, you know, sucking up the gas. You know, they've known so much for so long. They made the first electric car in the early 1800s, and now they're talking about it like it's a new thing. It's not. So I'm kind of wondering why for 200 years we're still using combustion engines, you know.
They started with alcohol, and they went to vegetable oil, and I think we'd have been okay if we'd have stuck with that, but then we passed prohibition and made the production of alcohol illegal, and it just happened we had a very convenient fuel called gasoline around.
And most people were making a hooch in the backyard and using that with the first cars, absolutely. And it was easy.
Yeah, but the Rockefellers couldn't make any money off of it, so they had to pass a law to make it illegal.
Can't do that. You know, I was hoping by now we'd have hovercrafts. We know that the planet has an electrical field. Why don't we just opposite that and hover? I would love to see some technology about that, too. I know that's
awesome. Well, I think you can. But... The planet's electrical field is certainly significant, but it's significant over a very large area. So it would obviously take something with a very large ability to pick that energy up to convert it into something useful. Even Tesla, when he set up his fields out there in Colorado Springs, had half the mountain wired into a few dozen lights.
And underneath he had, some sort of... water system going, much like they have in the pyramid. So I'm wondering if there are very, very ancient technologies that we should actually be using now. But, you know, it's odd about the military buildup. It's happened all over. It's great what's happening in Egypt. It's happening in Tunisia. It's happening in Haiti, and these things aren't talked about, and I'm so glad you're bringing them up. So I guess I just called in to say hi. Love your show.
PBSRadio.com. If it's not mainstream, it could be here. Information and knowledge bring humanity closer.
The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. They have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. There is no better way to view the sun than with a coronoscope. Trust me, you will be captivated if you ever get to watch the sun through one of these units. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We had to take a short technology break there. Sometimes when a phone call disconnects, it takes the net connection with it. We roll with it. It's, one blooper happens every now and then, and in the internet radio, we just roll with it. On podcast radio, it would be a disaster, but our listeners like it. They like the way we adapt to it. I just really want to apologize to Tracy for losing that call. Interesting stuff that U.S. troops are fit and on location in a foreign country just over our borders. I did not want to know anything about the insignia, the equipment, or their mission. I do not want to compromise any of that in any way. the point to be made is that we have troops stationed just about everywhere on both sides of our border. So where we were in the last hour, we were getting ready to pick up on this. And I want to be clear that I'm not advocating any kind of insurrection. I'm not advocating any kind of revolution. In that sense, what I am trying to do is to arouse your faculties as Americans to your rights and your duties and to the very behaviors of governments that caused the Declaration of Independence in the first place. The fact that states are now putting together their sovereignty acts one by one, and I'm not talking about historically, I'm talking about recently, like in the last few weeks. What's happening is in Egypt is a feeling that is happening everywhere. In every stage of these oppressions, and I quote, "We have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be ruler of a free people." Right now we have a superhero as a president. His power? He's Vacation Man. Now, it's easy to see that the British colony that was trying to act like a nation of united people with their own ideas about inalienable rights decided to draw a line in the sands of Virginia. We realize that the war for independence began in South Carolina, and the war for independence for the Confederate States began in South Carolina. Well, the South produced more raw materials than the North could buy. More cotton, more potatoes, more beans, more sorghum, more molasses. So they exported their goods to Europe. The Europeans loved the quality of Southern cotton and other crops and traded eagerly finished goods and precious metals like gold and silver. The South received them and was beginning to flourish. Now, you got to understand, the population growth of the South was slow compared to the North. And there were three reasons for this. For those of you that have not followed this very carefully, that the three reasons are that they did not have very many immigrants. Immigrants typically did not come into Southern ports. The smaller shipping ships, freight ships, came into the Southern ports, bringing goods from Europe, but the passenger ships typically came into the northern ports, Boston and Virginia. Some came into North Carolina, but by and large, most of the import money, the immigrants, and the birth rate occurred in the north. So large cities along the rivers and ports of the northern regions began to prosper and to grow and to become financial powerhouses. Most of the mills and foundries and things that made railroads and things like that, and also trains, were in the north. So it's just kind of interesting how division occurred. Generally, what happened was that that the South began to be taxed for the finished goods that were coming in from Europe, and began to be taxed for the raw materials that they were shipping to Europe. Unfortunately, the South wasn't receiving the benefit of those taxes. The benefit of the taxes was going to the North. Now, I will tell you, ideologically, right here and now, and we're going to cover this much more in this hour and the next hour, states do not go to war over ideologies. They don't go to war. They don't secede because they want to use slaves. Slaves are a very, 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 very small part of the economy. And it was already on its way out. It was already prohibitively expensive. It had only been practiced for less than 50 years anyway, and it was quickly dying out as a way of life. In fact, those that maintained servitudes in the South, it was so expensive that when one or two would leave, they had the slavery acts passed so that slaves that escaped to the North could be returned to the South. Of course, slavery is wrong. Of course, it is a violation of human rights. And that was eventually going to happen anyway. But you got to remember, I'm telling you, states don't fight over these ideologies. Remember, it wasn't until 1965, not 1985, I mean, not 1885, but 1965 when the Civil Rights Act was passed. You see, it's just not something that states consider important. They would not have gone to war over slavery. And the idea that history is being written, that the Civil War was fought over slavery, is absolutely preposterous. Even those people my age, even younger, realize that this is just a lot of revisionist Feldergarb. The states went to war. They seceded from the Union because of economic reasons. They were starving to death. The North was confiscatory in its taxation of the raw materials and finished goods that were coming in. And when the South tried to get around that, the North put a blockade in place, and that just wasn't going to be acceptable. So for those of you that have not followed the Constitutional Convention battles of the past three decades, the basic problem with Congress calling a Constitutional Convention at the request of 34 or more states in accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution is that leading constitutional scholars and judges have pointed out that the agenda of such a constitutional convention could not be specified by the state legislators, who would have started the whole process in motion in the first place. In brief, a constitutional convention could become a runaway convention, similar to our original constitutional convention in 1787. You remember, when no one could make up their minds and come up with a radically new constitution, not just a few specific amendments. Even Article 5's additional requirement that three-fourths of the states must ratify any amendments emanating from a constitutional convention is not sufficient safeguard against a runaway convention, given the biased media and political elites that would be involved in the whole process. Not necessarily. I argue with this in the sense that if Congress calls the Constitutional Convention, it could be runaway, because Lord knows we got Washington full of prima donnas. But if the states initiated the Constitutional Convention, if 40 or 45 states came together and had a well-drafted set of articles and had an Athenian list of, and I'll explain what that means in a minute, an Athenian list of delegates or representatives that were going to go represent this Constitutional Convention, that it could be controlled, and it would immediately be ratified, because the very three-quarters of the states that it would be required to ratify were the ones that implemented it in the first place. Now, Athenian means that even according to the Constitution, the delegates can go and vote their mind. Just because the governor sends you and says, by the way, I want you to pull this handle, push that button, and make this choice, legally, the delegate doesn't have to do that. By the Constitution, he can say, you know what, I know the governor sent me here to do this, but I really like that congressman's speech, so I'm going to vote with him. And next thing you know, you have a runaway Constitution. And so you set up an Athenian set of delegates. This means that the state of Tennessee is going to send five delegates. Every state is going to send five delegates to the Constitutional Convention. We are voting a state's function, much like senators. We're not voting by population. The local state legislatures and legislators are beholden to the very people with whom they live in their local neighborhoods. And so these representatives come together and they go to Washington with an exact set of amendments that they're going to make to the Constitution. Or, I would suggest, make no amendments to the Constitution. Go back to the original Constitution. Reset the Constitution. Don't change anything. Enforce what is already in the Constitution. In other words, those things that are not expressly given to the federal government in the Constitution are taken away from the federal government. Now, if the states want to keep a Food and Drug Administration, if they want to keep a Department of Energy, if they want to keep a Department of Education, then they can pay for it. They, the states, can also say what they want from that department. Those departments will no longer be empowered to hand unfunded mandates down to the states. And that's the way it should work. I agree with Madison in that to open an Article 5 constitutional convention would be a free-for-all with every special interest group trying to rewrite their particular amendment until the whole document would look like an IRS bill. That is why the terms of the Constitutional Convention would be to leave the Constitution untouched. The purpose would be to remove and abolish the agencies that are sucking our tax dollars, our national product, right down the drain without producing anything. All of them, the FDA, the EPA, the Department of Education, Energy, Transportation, and other agencies, they were once temporary charters to assist with a temporary financial or process deficiency. Instead, they have perpetuated themselves. They are self-replicating now with trillion-dollar budgets and taxpayer money to federal labs, weapons research, and into the profit margins of global corporations, a la government motors. This is embezzlement and subterfuge and extortion of the highest level. To bear the existence of these agencies under the autonomous rule of the executive branch, irrespective of Congress and the judiciary, is the acceptance of treason within our own government, and we are doing it by our own apathy. We must communicate with our own state legislatures. We must communicate to our own governors so that they will continue to build the sovereignty of each individual state. To say you are the United States of Texas, to say you are the United States of Idaho, to say you are the United States of Michigan, the United States of Florida, is proper. To say that we are United States right now is absolutely ludicrous, for we have no representation in Washington, and the states are taxed into oblivion with no representation. The American people, the people of Earth, deserve to live without fear that agents of these fiefdoms will break down their doors, invade their private communications, and seize their properties, be they intellectual or real, without due process and without the consent of the governed. A big word, governed, not ruled, governed, not lorded over, governed. Not kinged over, governed. Opponents to this idea will say that the Constitution is under attack, that attack has already taken place, and the war is nearly lost, my friends. This Constitutional Convention will be to restore the government to that which was originally designed and to which the rest of the world once looked for stability and example. The United States Constitution is unusually difficult to amend. As spelled out in Article 5, the Constitution can be amended in one of two ways. First, amendment can take place by a vote of two-thirds of both the House of Representatives and the Senate, followed by ratification of three-fourths of the various state legislatures. Ratification by 38 states would be required to ratify an amendment today. This first method of amendment is the only one used to date. Second, the Constitution might be amended by a convention called for this purpose by two-thirds of the state legislatures, not the Congress, not the Senate. If the convention's proposed amendments are later ratified by three-fourths of the state legislatures, well, I can tell you that the minimum is two-thirds. But if three-quarters of the states came you would have a veto-proof majority. So the congressman sent to Washington to represent those same states would cast their votes accordingly, or they would be impeached for not carrying out the will of the people who placed them there. The congressman cannot go against the state that put them there. If the state doesn't support what that congressman is doing, he's got 2 years and he's gone. Unless that congressman is able to deceive the state or the members of that state into thinking that he is representing them when he's not. I think it's a little difficult to convince the people of the state that you're representing them when you don't read the bills. But on the other hand, when Congress is handed a 2,000-page bill 24 hours before the vote, there's no chance in the world that they're going to have time to read it and understand it and debate the various points of it before the vote comes up. That, my friend, is by design, by the committees who let the bills to the floor. Because any amendment can be blocked by a mere 13 states withholding approval in either of the two houses. Amendments don't come easy. In fact, only 27 amendments have been ratified since the Constitution became effective. And remember, 10 of those ratifications occurred almost immediately as the Bill of Rights. So we're only talking 17 in over 250 years. The very difficulty of amending the Constitution greatly increases the importance of Supreme Court decisions interpreting the Constitution, because reversal of the court's decision by amendment is unlikely, except in cases when the public's disagreement is intense and close to unanimous. Pretty close. It takes three quarters of the states to do this. Even unpopular court decisions, such as the court's protection of flag burning, are likely to stand unless the court itself changes its collective mind. Not likely to do, since the court is appointed by the president. And the president, even members of the judiciary, wait until the right president is elected before retiring and thus firing their replacement. This is precisely why the Constitution should remain intact. It is the powers of the agencies and the secrecy of their policies and the scope of their crimes against the American people that must be changed. It has been a slow infection and cancer that has grown beyond the control of any government, beyond the control of any leader. This is precisely why the people must rise up and abolish these agencies and enact the medicine that will save the planet from certain bankruptcy and global war. I don't say those words lightly. These agencies are writing checks. They have no money to pay. They have no hope of having the money to pay. People will no longer bear the burden of these crimes by forfeiting their wages, the lands, their homes, their inheritances. The people will speak through the truest and most direct and most constitutional way. They, the people of the United States, through their state legislators, demand a constitutional convention to abolish the cabinet of the president and realign the executive branch and the function of government with that of the original design. The president is allowed to have a team of advisors who are in unison with him. That's constitutional. He is allowed to consult with them as experts in various fields. This was the design of the cabinet. The president has encroached upon this distribution of power in face of the advice of the Senate, deliberately given in face of the solemn decision of Congress. And now it appears in the face of the true meaning of the Constitution. The cabinet, you know, the president's cabinet members. This amounts to a system of dukes and earls who spend trillions of dollars of taxpayer money not only to manipulate the economy to the whims of the president, but also to funnel capital back into the very hands that supported his election. That's like a quid pro quo to me, and it is. What's worse, these same cabinets are directly, unilaterally, that means without answering to anyone, including Congress, these same cabinets are directed unilaterally to deny funds to opponents of the president and are commanded and empowered to destroy the enemies of the president and enemies of the friends of the president. I know this for a fact because I saw it with my own eyes. I saw the Secretary of Transportation stand before 10 congressmen and deny they even existed. It was unbelievable how he repudiated them. They were there to support small business to build electric vehicles. They were there to create jobs for people in the state of North Carolina. 8 congressmen from our state, 2 congressmen from an adjacent state. The Secretary of Transportation, Ray LaHood, faced us down and told us he was going to spend trillions of dollars refurbishing 230,000 miles of unused railroad so that he could get us out of our cars and back into trains. Now that is a secretary, a cabinet appointee by President Obama that is not listening. Why? Because he doesn't have to. Because he is ordered by the president to carry out a certain agenda, and he is doing it with a blank checkbook. Your checkbook. This is treason and high crimes against the people of the world. For this reason, the agencies, including those without cabinet-level representation, shall be abolished and dissolved from the payroll of the American people. If they can survive through the production of some value added, as with all free enterprise, then so be it. But they will no longer enjoy the unlimited faith and credit of the United States of America, and the president shall no longer be afforded command of thousands of bureaucrats who do his bidding without due process of law, and shall no longer tax the people without representation. And by the way, those taxes come in all kinds of forms. Can I see by a show of hands how many of you have been fined by a federal agency? OSHA, the FDA, the EPA. See, there are some people out there. Yeah, property violations, property seizures, fines for safety violations. Okay, yeah, that's all part of the tax, and they love doing it. The president has the duty to get the best advice he can, but those advisors should not exceed their constitutional mandate. There is no part of the Constitution that grants the federal government the right to impinge on the duties of the state. Example, the Department of Education can advise the president on education matters, but has no right to impose No Child Left Behind on the state's education. Within the state is a state responsibility. Education is local. Local school boards, local superintendents. This, if you want to read the Federalist Papers, if you want to read those words, additionally written by Thomas Jefferson on education, he vehemently defends states' rights to control education. Federal education is tantamount to socialism, fascism. The now world-renowned American Apathy Party, that's what we're called out there, is tantamount to ratification of the president's rule over the people. Ooh, did I say rule? I did. Tantamount to ratification of the president's rule over the people, not governing the people. He directs his secretary to do this or that with state's monies. He creates a new program of stimulation that sounds as wonderful as free snow cones to everyone on a hot summer day. But the ice cream truck never comes to your neighborhood. In fact, it never comes to anyone's neighborhood. In fact, the driver was never even hired to do the job. Well, actually, he was hired three times and fired so that it could be said they created three jobs. It was all talk. It was all smiles and speeches and nothing but the laundering of the state's monies to the supporters of the president. The South, prior to the war between the states, by the way, in the South, we do call that the recent unpleasantness, was trying to grow and conduct global commerce, and had no benefit from the tariffs and federal taxations, and yet was required to pay them. The North, on the other hand, was industrializing and providing the civic utilities, such as roads and garbage, and on Southern dollars. The imbalance in the Congress is what allowed the Union to confiscate the earnings of the South for the benefit of the more powerful voting body of the North. The gifted and powerful Republican orator, Charles Sumner. Sumner County in Tennessee is named after him. Took to the floor on May 20th, 1856, and took aim at a subject that was sure to ignite the fires of opposition to the Southern economy. He did not address the subject of taxation without representation, which was at the heart of Southern politics. That's why the ships were at sea. That's where the rubber met the road. That's where farmers really felt it. That's where legislators really heard it. He drew a sword of passion on a subject of obscurity, slavery. He attacked the South by saying that Stephen A. Douglas and Andrew Butler, quote, had taken a mistress who, though ugly to others, is always lovely to him. Though polluted in the sight of the world, is chaste in his sight. I mean the harlot slavery. Close quote. For 3 hours, Sumner did not use his gift to heal and to elevate, but to excoriate the South as stupid, slow of speech, and with no regard for human rights. Senator Butler did not take it so lightly and wanted to have a duel. Representative Preston Brooks, Butler's nephew, was infuriated and intended to challenge Sumner to a duel. You remember Sumner was a senator. To this end, Brooks consulted with fellow South Carolina Representative Lawrence M. Kite on dueling etiquette. Kite told him, dueling was for gentlemen of equal social standing, and that Sumner was no better than a drunkard due to the supposedly coarse language he had used during his speech. Brooks concluded, in turn, that since Sumner was no gentleman, it would be more appropriate to beat him with his cane. 2 days later, on the afternoon of May 22nd, Brooks confronted Sumner as he sat writing at his desk in an almost empty Senate chamber. Mr. Sumner, I have read your speech twice over carefully. It is a libel on South Carolina. And Mr. Butler, who is a relative of mine, as Sumner began to stand up, Brooks beat Sumner severely on the head before he could reach his feet, using a thick gutta-percha cane with a gold head. Sumner was knocked down and trapped under the heavy desk, which was bolted to the floor. But Brooks continued to strike Sumner until Brooks ripped the desk from the floor. By this time, Sumner was blinded by his own blood, and he staggered up the aisle and collapsed, lapsing into unconsciousness. Brooks continued to beat the motionless Sumner until his cane broke, at which point he left the chamber. Several other senators attempted to help Sumner, but were blocked by Kite, who brandished a pistol and shouted, "Let them be." Kite was censured for his actions. Violence is never rewarded and always brings on more violence. Sumner, although an invalid for 3 years, finally returned to speak as a senator. He was reelected to a seat, but he did not serve full time. The empty chair was used as a weapon of revenge against the South. Sumner was a martyr to the North and a traitor to the South. When Lincoln successfully ran for president 4 years later, he did not have the will to cross that line drawn with the blood of violence and extend the hand of reunion to the South. 4 months after he took office, the South evicted Union troops from the only location occupied by federal forces in Southern Territory, Fort Sumter. Once back in Southern control, trade renewed in full with Europe. The White House responded by placing naval forces off the coast and seizing shipments between Europe and the new country called the Confederate States of America. Things did not get better. The fires of hatred toward the South, fueled with the black coal of Northern senators and congressmen, drove an iron stake into the ground that only a great leader could remove. Lincoln was not capable of being that leader. Instead, Lincoln decided to declare war. The result was the slaughter of more than 600,000 Americans on American soil. It should be noted that during the first 3 years of the war, the North lost virtually every single battle. Every one. The South never invaded the North. Finally, the North won a battle at Gettysburg. Lincoln put together perhaps the most grammatically perfect speech of all time in only 79 words. "Just so you know that the revisionists have been at work since the early days until now to revise and alter the meaning of that historic address. There are actually 5 or more versions of Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. I bet you didn't know that. The one I'm about to read you is the version that appears on the Lincoln Monument in Washington, D.C. and contains the words, 'Under God.' This term appears to be the most notable difference among the 5 versions. According to popular accounts, Lincoln spoke those words." All right, I'm going to read the Gettysburg Address to you. It's only 79 words. It was a 2-minute speech. When I read this speech, and I've read it perhaps 200 times in my life, when I read this speech, I often reflect upon the current political setting of our nation. And it's changed over time. But now it's particularly poignant, and it's very powerful. So I'm going to read it to you, and you might reflect upon Gregory Peck saying the same words. 47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is also fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. For it is us the living. It is for us the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people and by the people and for the people shall not perish from the earth. Now it should be noted that presidents always pick the perfect backdrop for their speeches in order to have the most effect on history. This speech was crafted carefully to use the bodies of Union troops buried in the crown behind him as the emotional hammer to drive the nails into the coffin of the South. The South was the enemy to be conquered, and now, with renewed funding and courage, they began a campaign of burning cities and crops and pillaging to bring the Confederacy to its knees. Peace was eventually gained, and the Union was reconstructed. But a peace won through victory is never peace at heart. The animosity between states and the federal government has never subsided. It is time for the apathy to end. It is time for action. It is time for a very careful and very controlled constitutional convention to remove and abolish the agencies and departments that are not specifically assigned to the federal government. The trillions of dollars it takes to run these non-productive and unconstitutional agencies and departments shall immediately return to the states which it was taken by mandate. The reason we bring this subject up tonight is that it was outlined and described in detail in Volume 3 of The Ark of Millions of Years. I even used the words presidential council in the description. What you're about to hear is the parallel, a side note. It's really, really something. And those of you that are talking on the chat, I'm listening to you. I am reading them. I think that the subject of slavery is very incendiary, and I'm not trying to cover that tonight. What I'm trying to cover is the fact that states had the right to express their way of economy to a federal government. Slavery had nothing, very, very little to do with the start of the Civil War. The northern states and southern states had slaves. In fact, after the Civil War was over, President Lincoln still had slaves in the White House. Yes, President Lincoln still had slaves in the White House. Slavery had little or nothing to do with the Civil War. It is a revisionist effort to pit people against people, not states against a nation. It was always a fight over states' rights and economy. States never go to war over ideology. They always go to Washington to fight for economy, never over ideology. I have said and maintained war is no way to peace. Victory does not bring peace, but only the time between wars. It keeps a military complex in business, lording over and then building for rebellion to another war. This time is over. No government is going to be successful making people angry at one another. All people belong. All people are represented. Whether you're black or Jewish or Irish, I'm Scottish, it does not matter. We are all earthlings and we are all represented. 19 days ago, a leaderless, peaceful group took the streets of Cairo and demanded the old government be dissolved. Mubarak, finally, and only after absconding with $70 billion of the people's money, that's about $1 billion a year, he's 82 years old, he's been in power for 30 years, absconded with $70 billion of the people's money and left office and resides in a resort for the world's wealthiest billionaires. Today, Sunday, Egypt's military dissolved the country's parliament and suspended its constitution following the ouster of longtime leader Hosni Mubarak, telling Egyptians that it would be in charge for 6 months or until elections can be held. There is no great oratory. There is no cemetery as a backdrop. There was no war. There is only a surge of intention by the people that will bring freedom and peace to the Middle East, not through war, but through a representative ideal not based on rule. This current composition is basically a technocratic government to run the day-to-day affairs, to take care of the security void that has happened, and to also address the issues related to the economy. This is from one of the government officials, Shukri, told CNN, Farid Zakaria, GPS. Lest anyone think this is a classic military coup d'etat, do not jump to conclusions. Don't listen to late night news. They're going to tell you the military has taken over. They're going to post pictures of tanks across the driveway of the Capitol Palace. Not true. Don't believe a word of it. A leading opposition figure said Sunday that the military must explain its plans in more detail or see a resumption of the demonstrations that drove Mubarak from office. Believe me, there's no animosity between the people and the army or between the army and the people in Egypt. They're friends, and they're going to work this out. To continue, this leading opposition figure said, and by the way, no names. Nobody is claiming leadership of this group. They need to come out of their headquarters and start talking to the people and tell us what is in store for us. And that was El Baradi told GPS. Basic civic services like clean drinking water, roads, sanitary sewer are among the top priorities for the new parliament being put together from representatives of the people. Now, there is a groundswell across the Middle East to throw out the religious and the dictatorial rulers of old. The people are educated, and they communicate with one another around the world the same way you do. They use Twitter, they use Facebook, they use their cell phones, they use email. They're communicating with one another. They're realizing that they are in power. They have the real control of their country, and it's about time. That movement of energy to demand relief from those things outlined in the declaration that I read you earlier tonight still stands. Now, today, more than ever, only one question remains. We're going to cover this in depth in the next hour. Only one question remains. You know, I need you to communicate this to your governors if you can, because this is very powerful. This is history in the making. This is what's happening around us right now. I can tell you this. We don't read history. We make history, and this is it. Will the state legislators of this land, state level, state senators, will the state legislatures of this land have the courage to declare their sovereignty and their sovereign right to serve their own people? We'll carry on in the next hour. Third hour coming up, X Squared Radio. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. We're so glad that you're here with us. We're coming to you live from southern Mississippi. A little Muse there. Song Uprising. Thought it might be apropos since we were talking about the efforts of the brave Egyptians finally saying enough is enough to their government. Non-violently, by the way. Any violence that you saw was a pure fabrication. Had nothing to do with the groups that were actually organizing or massing to make this happen. By the way, I found something very interesting. Just unbelievable the way things work. I was watching the news. Yes, I was watching Fox News. I flip around between them. But at the particular time I was watching Fox News, and I was a little surprised. I was a little surprised because there was a live shot of the square with, I don't know, perhaps 100,000 in the square. It was just packed with people, packed with people. Flags were waving along the sides. But I noticed something very strange. The announcer, the news person, was saying that Mubarak had decided that he wasn't going to leave office, and that this had brought made the people angry, and there was a lot of violence that was getting ready to happen, and it was a tremendous fever of opposition, and the people were just angry as could be. And while she was talking, I was watching what the masses were doing behind, live on the camera. They were praying. They were praying. Tens of thousands of them standing up, raising their hands to the sky, kneeling down and putting their foreheads to the ground, to their blanket, to the east, in mass, peacefully, praying. No sound, no bottles, no pushing against barricades, no police, no army. They were praying in the streets of their own city, and our own news organization was saying that they were angry and that they were violent, and we didn't know what was going to happen, but our camera is going to be there live to catch it for you, no problem. By the way, sell more sponsorship, will you? We need more money. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I listened to the words of what's being said by those that are being interviewed on the streets. It sounds like our college students. It sounds like American civics. We want to be represented. We want clean drinking water. We don't want to be rousted out of our homes and beat. We don't want to be forced to work overtime. And if we don't, we end up in prison. We don't want to work for $85 a month anymore while the leadership of the nation rides around in limousines and flies all over the country. He left with $70 billion of their dollars. That $70 billion could have cleaned out those canals right there in Cairo City where those people are getting their drinking water that are choked with trash and old motors and garbage piled, not inches, yards deep. And it's been there for years. It's not the people's responsibility to clean that up. It's the civic. They are supposed to clean that up and make it usable by the people. They've had enough. All right, let's bring Mark from Ohio on the program. Mark, welcome to the program. It's good to have you here. I can't hear you yet, but I know you're out there. We're just waiting on the studio to catch up. I know you're there.
Okay, hello?
There you go. Now we're unmuted. Okay, welcome to the program.
How are you this evening, Brooks?
Hey, I'm doing really well. We've had the first really cheerful, nice day. Even the birds responded today. It's been miserable for the last 4 weeks down here.
Now, you're in Mississippi?
Yeah, I'm about 80 miles north of the Gulf Coast, down here working an engineering contract while the car plant puts the last few pieces together.
But you don't have any snow on the ground, right?
No, we didn't get any snow, but my goodness, we might as well have. We wake up, it's 24 degrees in the morning. It warms up. It's raining.
Yeah, that sounds rough. Hey, are you open to a little exopolitics? I know you've been talking about politics, but I thought I would change gears a little bit.
Well, we're talking about political science, and absolutely, we've been talking about the Constitution, and we've been talking about the historic revolution that just took place in Egypt and has now happened in Palestine. The whole parliament just resigned. This is really amazing. We're watching it happen right before our eyes. What you got?
All right. This is a little exopolitics. This is one of the strangest contactee cases that I ever ran across, and this is out of Jim Nichols' UFO art book, and Jim Nichols is also quite a researcher himself, but this story was actually investigated by Colonel Wendell Stevens in September of 1979. Colonel Stevens got a call from a terrified man in Marana, Arizona, and this man was his name was Rafael Chacon. He was a Costa Rican immigrant who was living with his wife and child, and they were living in a modest little mobile home there in Marana, Arizona. And one day he was watering his garden next to his mobile home when a small humanoid, semi-solid figure made up of swirling dots appeared before him, hovering a few feet off the ground. And this being introduced himself as Nardel from Orion, and he informed Chacon that he informed Raphael that Raphael was also from the same race he was, and that he, in fact, was living on planet Earth as an incarnated being. In other words, at a soul level, this Raphael, the Costa Rican immigrant, was also from Orion, and he was also of the same race as this humanoid that, again, is made up of dots, and he's floating about a foot off the ground. And this contact went on and off for about 4 months, and Wendell Stevens went back and talked to this man several times. And finally, what ended up happening is that the being, Nardel, this dot man, told Raphael that he needed to leave Earth because there were some future events, vast wars and cataclysms that would occur shortly, and that he needed to send his wife and child back to Costa Rica, and that he needed to, in fact, leave Earth and go with Nardel back to his own system, the Orion system, and that's actually what ended up happening. And the man sent his wife and kids to Costa Rica, and suddenly, I mean, he was never heard from again, and there were several unclaimed benefits checks left in his mailbox there near his mobile home. And I thought I would share that with you. I know that's quite a strange case, isn't it?
Well, not really. I think that I'm sympathetic to the idea that there are souls here who once occupied physical shape on other worlds. I have been told by those that study this more than I do that usually we incarnate on the worlds where we continue to be born and die until that world no longer exists. But I find several cases in pretty well accepted normal mainstream history where that was not the case. I have two examples. Number one was Adam. Adam, obviously a soul from another world, breathed into a being, a body made here on this world, or at least an earth, and then transported here. The other would be Jesus. Jesus obviously did not come from a dead world. He came from a world that was perfectly capable of supporting life, and by all accounts, returned to that world and promised to return here. So I think that the idea that this Costa Rican immigrant could return to his planet in a single lifetime without having to die to get there is a little different, because neither one of these beings ever left the world until after they died. Jesus, of course, permanently transfigured or exalted or resurrected into a glorified like body, was able to leave this world. Adam, we don't know about. We know his body is interned somewhere in Jerusalem, but that his soul went on somewhere else, and I guess will yet be resurrected in the resurrection of the morning of the just. But it's interesting that that he would have to leave his family behind. That's the only thing that I find inconsistent with this, because I don't actually know anybody from Orion, but it doesn't feel consistent. Once you've lived a life here, there, and you've decided to come live a life here, that they would come get you in your prime and say, oh, by the way, you got to leave your progeny here. And I don't know who the souls are that occupy those bodies, but they're involved with him. They're his children. They're learning from him. They're receiving of his grace and wisdom. and now he's taken from them.
Well, that's an interesting point you make, and I think at some point in this case that Nardell, this being from Orion, told Raphael that his family would be cared for and that they would be okay. But yeah, that's the strangest part about the case. But you said something about Adam not being from Earth, which is very interesting because if you read the book of Urantia, that's basically the story that it tells, I believe. And it says that Adam and Eve were kind of brought here as a genetic upgrade to the planet. And yeah. I wondered if you had ever read that.
Yeah, a different creative process. I mean, Adam, if you just go literally by the creation story in Genesis, he was made from dirt. He was made from the minerals of this world. So ostensibly, Adam did not have a belly button. He was a clone, a created being, and then life was breathed into him. Now, which is, we haven't done it yet, but I would say that from a molecular biological point of view, it's possible. However, Eve is a completely different story. They put Adam asleep, remove a rib, which is obviously a great amount of DNA and marrow, and took it and created Eve, actually cloned Eve. Now, Eve wasn't brought to Adam until she was a full-grown woman. So this whole birthing process and everything was surrogate on another world. So Eve was, that body was cloned, put into a surrogate mother, carried to term and delivered, and she was raised all the way through infancy, childhood, adolescence, and then brought to Adam while he was in the Garden of Eden. None of her is from this world except for his genetics.
And are you of the opinion that there were already human beings on the earth at this time? I've kind of come to that conclusion myself.
Well, if you look at the timeline, Adam and Eve are evicted from the Garden of Eden. Eve is then fertile, and they begin having children. The first group of kids that that they have among them are Cain and Abel. So Cain slays Abel, and then they don't really know how to deal with murder. There's no capital punishment. So they just mark him and exile him. Now, ostensibly, they would be exiling him to a complete world void of human life. But that's not what happened. Cain went to the land of Nod and took a wife, which meant there were other humans here at the time. And
right.
There were. And so you take these two genetic lines, and they cross and create another genetic line. Hence, if you look at the longevity of Adam to Noah, you have people living 1,000 years or more. And then in just a few generations, they're down to 100 years, then 70, then 60, then about 55 years, and then it came back up again. This is because of the blending of these two genetic lines. And by the way, these aren't the only two beings that show that immediate upgrade in the genetics. Plants and animals also show this sudden influx of advanced DNA.
Do you believe, or do you think that it was the firmament around the earth that allowed Adam and Eve and those people of that time to live to those very long ages? In other words, was it the atmosphere that was protecting them from the harsh rays of our sun that allowed them to live to those very long ages?
It's a good theory. What we talk about in our books is an event we call the union of the polarity, that actually the world upon which Adam and Eve grew up all the way to Noah prior to the flood was another earth, that it was a higher vibrational earth, a spiritual earth, and that earth came through some kind of a wormhole or a dimensional hole and merged with this earth. This earth then became a planet with two forms of matter occupying the same space. A higher vibrational matter called spirit matter, a lower vibrational form of matter called temporal matter. not unlike the human body. We are a higher vibrational soul being occupying a lower vibrational bunch of peas and carrots, forming the human body, the biological transducer. And one day, as with our body, those two will come apart. And we pontificate in our books that this will occur somewhere around the year 2012, and that we are already seeing the harmonic dissidence between those Earths as we speak.
I recently read a book called Inside the Flying Saucers, written by George Adamski. And George Adamski's contacts told him that there would be a pole shift sometime in the future, and the pole shift somehow would cause the firmament to surround the Earth again, and that would allow the long lifespan again. And I wonder what you thought of that theory.
Well, it could happen. I think what we're seeing right now is we're seeing an influx of souls that have lived in other worlds for a long, long time. They're coming here, and they're a little out of balance. They're a little out of pace. They live through their adolescence, and their intellects and their spirits are running at such a high frequency, and they're overwhelmed. They're daunted by this world in which we live, which can get quite dark. It can get quite depressing, especially when it seems every frontier has been taken. I think at our core, we are a frontier-reaching people. When we've done everything that could be done, when we've seen everything that could be seen, we, like a cat in a cage, we got to see something else. And I think that those beings are coming here now because the Earth is getting ready to go through this metamorphosis, and it needs all that consciousness here. It's just that consciousness hasn't remembered what it's here for, and it's kind of lost. Now, people that have found that way, I have never seen a more peaceful, less selfish, less materialistic people in my life. Those that have not found that are worried so much about how they're going to make their next car payment. It blows my mind to see this separation. I think that will determine what long life the being has to live. If it's just a race to see how many toys you can accumulate, and we're convinced we're only going to live to be 70 or 80 years old and we're going to die, I guess it's no surprise to anyone.
Do you still think the pole shift is going to occur?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that it can occur. It's a cosmological occurrence that we witness every 11 years on the sun. We have a geological record of it occurring here on the Earth. We're, I don't know, 500,000 years overdue for one. And we're already seeing the magnetic anomaly that's a precursor to a pole shift. We're seeing our pole march in a straight line toward Russia, which is perpendicular to the center pole of the Earth. And that's exactly in behavior mathematically with the Coriolis effect that Newton theorized.
Well, Dr. Agnew, thanks for speaking with me this evening. I'll let you get back to your show, and it's always good to talk to you, sir.
Same here. I always appreciate your call. Great questions. Thanks for showing up.
Good night.
Good night. So, it's interesting as we talk about politics, exopolitics, how we come back to the human consciousness, the human drive to significance, that we are a free people and that we are looking for freedom from dominion. And when we realize that you live in a country or you're observing a country that's in dominion like that, and you see the people in fear of their own government, the very thing that they put in place for just basic stuff, the national defense, public welfare, those kinds of things, to make sure that we have civic things like water treatment and schools and trash pickup and police to take care of the few people that refuse to obey the law. Laws to organize things and put things together, but not to so restrict people that they cannot speak, that they cannot believe, that they cannot worship, that they cannot assemble, and also to be able to produce, to work hard and work smart and have a dream and be able to save and put back and start a business or save up so that they can put their kids through college. But when that starts being taken away from them, when the government gets to the point where they need so much money to cover all the bad checks they're writing, then sooner or later it becomes oppressive. It becomes confiscatory. And then you're really going to have problems. Let's see if we can, let's go ahead and take one more caller. Let's see here. Scott from Florida on line one, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dr. Brooks. Just a note on Mark's comments. I used to read George Adamski when I was a teenager, and Brad Steiger and John Keel, and going into a psychotherapist's office and talking about the Men in Black and have you diagnosed as a paranoid schizophrenic. But I've been, since been exonerated. Just wanted to throw that in. A note of triumph. To listen to Aida, Verdi's opera, which is set in Egypt. Act two starts with a very triumphant march and chorus that is absolutely spellbounding. In fact, apparently they've produced the opera in front of the pyramids in the past. It's set in Egypt, and they actually presented it there in front of the pyramids also. A note of triumph for Egypt, I think. And for whatever reason, I've been drawn to listen to this on YouTube. There are several different YouTube performances that are quite
what
astounding.
Opera is that again?
This is Aida, A-I-D-A, by Giuseppe Verdi, written in the 1800s, probably around the same time as Lincoln's address. What was going on in Italy and in the Romantic period was, you know, and things going on in this country of a different nature.
Well, you know, I've often wondered, I feel an affinity for the Declaration of Independence because much of the wording came from the Magna Carta, which was written in 1215 and actually signed by one of my ancestors. The problems that they had with King John back then were very much similar to the problems that the colonialists had with King George. And as I'm trying to make tonight, a similar problem that the people of Egypt had with Mubarak and a similar problem that we have, not so much with the White House because it's kind of a misnomer or a misdirection or should I say a misinformation. Once the president gets into power, he picks a cabinet, assumed that he picks a cabinet. Maybe the cabinet is picked for him. I'm not really sure because a lot of these people he doesn't have relationships with or for all intents and purposes had an adversarial relationship with before the election. But after the election, oh, we're all buddies. Hey, how would you like to be my cabinet member? The cabinet traditionally was this team of experts that helped the president in areas that he's not an expert in, like accounting, like foreign affairs and things like that, that maybe a small lawyer from Illinois or Kentucky would not have exposure to. Like, for instance, Mr. President, if he reaches into his left pocket, it means he's going for a gun type of thing. The cabinets can be picked for presidents by other advisors, like former chief of staffs of other presidents. They have kind of experience with that, and I understand all that. But when that cabinet member, the secretary of this or the secretary of that, is handed an agency, a department with thousands of employees and hundreds of billions of dollars in budgets, then it becomes a system of dukes and earls. And the president then rules over budgets that draw revenue from the communities on a very local level. then it becomes oppressive, because that's taxation without representation. And it would be okay if the money came from Florida, came up to the federal government, and they said, okay, this is what we need to do to help Florida with hurricane troubles or, you know, emergency preparedness or blah, blah, blah. But that's not what happens. The money comes from Florida. 80% of it gets used in overhead in Washington, and the rest of it gets sent to New York. Why? Why are the people in Florida's money taken and then given to people in New York? Well, because New York voted for me and Florida didn't. And you can follow it.
Hillary would have had this state. I mean, that was an error on the Democratic Party's part, but, you know, I won't go into that. Back to the House of Representatives, Ron Paul, for example, I think has beat the odds with the tendency to, as you mentioned, the House of Representatives tends to fall into obscurity in that they become temps or they are seen as temps. But I think Ron Paul has beat the odds there. Unfortunately, Representative Lee has not. It's tragic to see. One can see success with Dr. Ron Paul and what he has done in terms of finding a pulsation of success and creating laws so as to help us with the Federal Reserve, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch moderators of debates who confront Ron Paul at, say, a debate and say, sir, are you even electable? Well, what kind of a question is that for a candidate who's running, someone of Ron Paul's stature? And of course, he tore the guy apart by a great answer. But nevertheless, you know, you fall into ignominy when the press refuses to air you in the way that you're trying to present yourself. I'll give you a case in point. I was speaking to the Department of Energy, and I said, you know, we're actually doing a lot of good. You know, we're about to be on Fox News. And you know what he told me? This guy at the Department of Energy, his first name is Charles. I'm not going to give you his last name, but I have a name, I have a date, and I have a telephone number. If anybody wants to check up on it, they can. He did say it. He said, oh, don't go on Fox News. I said, why not? He said, because the president doesn't like Fox News. If you go on Fox News, you're finished. There's no way you'll ever get a grant if you go on Fox News. That's the agency. That's the Department of Energy that's run by the Secretary of Energy. And this came from the right-hand person of Undersecretary Christine Johnson. So, and that's a real name. That's a real name, people, and I'll back it up. I will swear to it before Congress.
And for whatever reason, I was watching the archives of Freedom Watch with Judge Napolitano, and this last week I tried to access the archives, but now there's an apparent McAfee is picking up a virus in the archives, and I don't know what that's about, or a problem with the, and I begin to wonder, okay, what's going on here now? Because, you know, I don't have time to watch the show during the week, and I can only access the archives and, you know, this sort of thing. So, who knows? But I'll let you go, Dr. Pruitt.
I just wonder about that. I mean, Janet Napolitano isn't thinking up this stuff on her own. And what she's making public statements about is only a fraction of what's actually being implemented.
Mm. She is wife of Judge?
Yeah, and she's thinking about running for Senate. So the revolving door goes around and around.
Okay. Have a good night.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for the call, Scott. Have a wonderful week.
Goodbye.
So the executive branch didn't take anything from us. We gave unlimited power and unlimited wealth willingly to it. What? How can any bank account be unlimited? because the Federal Reserve creates wealth from nothing but ones and zeros and is writing worthless checks as fast as the CPU can process the deduction. Why would any government write bad checks? One of two reasons. Either they never expect to have to make that check good, or they are expecting a windfall that they will pay everything off with, like winning the lottery. And I doubt very seriously the latter is realistic. But the first reason is very probable. The ones who are confiscating your money against your will and without your representation never expect to make that check good. Before we sell our states to another nation, don't you think we can call upon our governors to enact a sovereignty act? Don't you think that we can call a constitutional convention with clear ideals and detailed demands? Don't you think we can save this planet and stop our path toward Armageddon painted in the golden street in front of us? If we can scrub the Department of Energy and the Department of Education and the Food and Drug Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency and the IRS for the payroll, we might stand a chance. If the states agree that some level of these bureaucracies should survive, let them fund it. We need $4 trillion shaved from the federal budget to save this nation. You heard the Republicans make an announcement this week that they're going to cut $100 billion from the budget. Guys, it's not even lunch money. $100 billion isn't even lunch money. That's not even the amount that they gave General Motors and the banks. We need $4 trillion shaved from the federal budget to save this nation. We need to get back to making stuff. We need to start thinking like earthlings and following the example of the Egyptians. No, I don't mean the propaganda that our news outlets are forcing down our throats, that Islamic radicals are seizing control of Egypt. That's nonsense. That's garbage. It's disinformation. I was there. My friends were there. I mean the idea that oppression and seizure of the state's wealth by a class of politicians who produce nothing is wrong. I mean that a million-man march is a social gathering. We need 10 million to march on every capital in every state. I mean that governors should stop sending their tax revenues to the federal government until this matter is resolved. I mean that states should call and manage a constitutional convention to reset the powers of the branches of government to those specifically outlined in the Constitution and recover the inalienable rights that have been taken from us by the subterfuge and laws that aren't even read by Congress, let alone crafted by our representatives. The only thing that could stop such a movement is the seizure of the last bastion of free press we have. And I'm very frightened to announce that the White House already has the kill switch in his right front pocket. The lights on free speech are about to go out unless we have a call to action and see to our duty as outlined in the oldest and most inspired constitution in the history of the earth, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object and vices are designed to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. And by the way, during the program tonight, the Palestinian cabinet tendered their resignations on Monday, after which Prime Minister Salam Fayyad will select new ministers at the request of President Mahmoud Abbas, political sources said. Middle East, it's happening. The fever is there. The will is there. The organization level is not there. I'm telling you, a million-man march on Washington is nothing more than a social gathering. It is amusing to those who have seized control of our government and drain every drop of blood, sweat, and tears from the working people of this country. They laugh at your million-man march. What we need is a 10-million-man march. Not on the capital of the United States. We need a 10-million-man march on every governor's, every capital building in the nation, all 50 states. That's kind of hard to do because some states don't even have 10 million people in them. But if you had a million-man march on every single capital in the country that looked something like Egypt, we're going to shut down the commerce of this state until this is done. Do you think it would take us 19 days in this country? Do you think the governors could recall their national guards from all around the world and bring them home to take care of the security of their own states? Do you think Arizona could bring their national guard back from Iraq to defend the invasion of Mexico into their borders? Do you think Texas could do the same thing? California could do the same thing? Nevada? Do you think other states could have the courage to do that? Do you think the governors could say, no, sir, you cannot fly Air Force One over our state. You go around. We do not give permission. We don't give permission for federal troops to cross on the highways inside our borders. State sovereignty can be a powerful thing. It doesn't have to end in secession, and it most certainly doesn't have to go to war. The Egyptians showed us that you can go out there with nothing but flags and a prayer rug. Nothing but flags and a prayer rug. And you could make one of the despots of the Middle East leave office. Now, he managed to get away with $70 billion of cash from that country, but you know, I got a feeling he isn't going to get away with everything. I got a feeling that resort's going to get a little scarce of people who don't want high profile people around. I got a feeling that Mr. Mubarak is going to find that desert resort a little bit lonely. He's going to be looking out of the side of his sunglasses the rest of his life because he just ripped off the lifeblood of a people who deserve more than what they got. They're smart. They're industrious. I didn't see any lazy people over there. They were working hard for that $85 a month. And those in the tourist business begrudged having to beg for a few Egyptian pounds to get through the day. But they do it. They work hard and they work long hours. I can tell you, Cairo never sleeps. So I apologize for the jumping around of the quality of the internet tonight. Mississippi doesn't have the great infrastructure that some states do. After Katrina, things didn't recover too well. They're still not recovering too well. But we're doing very well here on BBS Radio. Lots of new people, lots of new shows coming on, lots of new programs coming on. BBS Radio is very quickly going to take over the internet as the number one talk radio network on the internet. If it's not mainstream, it's right here on X Squared Radio and BBS Radio. We've been here since 2005 and will continue to be so. We will see you next week right here on X Squared Radio. It's 9:47 Central Time, which means we are out of time. We have to let the next program get geared up. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio. Those of you who are chatting, calling in, and also giving us messages on Skype, you keep us inspired. Thank you. Thank you so much for being part of X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Egg saying good night. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.